Good morning.
Morning, this is Chris and Mabel calling for Harley.
Oh, Harley's unavailable at this time.
Oh, okay.
She's
Thanks.
hunting wabbits.
Well, just tell her I called then. How's it going?
Right, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
I guess Rob is a no-show. We'll mark him off.
Yep. Even if he tries to connect or join us now, he's missed the cutoff.
He's missed the cutoff time.
So we'll still talk about the comic he chose, though, and just.
Yeah. Did you read all four of them or just one?
I just read the final one.
Okay. That's kind of a hard one to read if you're. You lose the context of why they're all there.
Yeah, I mean, I caught some allusions to things that probably happened,
Yeah.
but I did see Rob just come online.
Oh yeah. I'll tell him to ping me when he's ready. Let me make sure my recorder's working.
Ping, ping,
Yep.
ping.
Did you go see Justice League yet?
Nope.
Ah.
I have not seen it. I think I might just wait to rent it. Not too excited about some of the things I've heard about it. I think there'll still be things I enjoy about it, but I'm not that excited about it right now. Not to be a party pooper.
You're a party pooper.
I don't know if Rob's seen it yet, but I'm sure he's planning on it.
Don't think so. I don't think he's seen it. He saw the Apple Dumpling Gang, but he hasn't seen any of the other stuff.
Yeah, it seems like it usually goes a week or two after it comes out.
Yeah. Or
When he gets a
sometimes he
chance.
doesn't like. I think there's some Marvel movies and stuff he still has in the queue to watch. Like
Yeah.
I don't think it's like his priority to go see a something at the theater unless it's something he really wants to see.
Yeah. I think more so than me, though.
You not like the movies 'cause of the socialness? I mean, like it's a social situation, or is it because, I don't know, it's a lot of money to pay for a ticket?
No, it just depends. I went to see Wonder Woman. I was pretty excited about Wonder Woman. I'm just, I guess, picky.
Desensitized?
Yeah, I'm just not. There's not as much excitement in as I used to have about the media properties and stuff. Like I don't really watch any of the TV shows and I see most of the movies eventually,
Yeah, it's
but
like oversaturation, I think. Because
yeah, I pick and choose.
before you'd get one like every 3 years or something, like something big, and now you get like, I don't know, 10 movies a year in the genre we love, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like it's a lot. And then you have, I don't know, a dozen or so TV shows, if not more, that are in it, so it desensitizes you a little bit. But I did get goosebumps when I saw the Star Wars trailer and they have all those AT-ATs lined up. Oh my God, I just like
Yeah.
I love those walkers. I mean, since I was a kid, Empire Strikes Back just it to me it's still one of the best movies ever because you typically never ever see the bad guys win. And I just it blew me away because I was like, jaw dropping. You left me like this, and I'm gonna have to
For
wait
three
5 years,
years.
yeah, 3 years for that. And I don't know. I was like, when I saw those AT-ATs all lined up on the big screen, I was like, oh man, that looks so awesome. I think they're such a awesome design. I never had an AT-AT toy.
Oh, I still have an AT-AT.
Yeah, it's the one toy that I have the original Millennium Falcon and the Death Star and a bunch of stuff, but I never I have an AT-AT, but it's like a fourth generation AT-AT.
Yeah, I think that was like the one that was like my big, that was like the only Christmas present I pretty much got that year. I got that and a couple like probably like really small tiny things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I said I wanted one. So they're like, you're not going to get much else. Like, okay. Good
Yeah.
morning.
Good
Hi,
morning.
Rob.
Glad you could
You
show
guys,
up.
yeah, I've been waiting for you guys to call me.
You
I'm like,
get your tardy notice.
I've been sitting here waiting and waiting.
You
I
weren't
see
even
you guys
online
go green. You
until
were
just a while
online.
ago.
It was past 10:30.
Oh,
It was
well,
like
excuse me.
10:32, so
We use satellite time. We don't use a wall clock time.
Were you guys talking about superhero movies or Star Wars movies?
We were just talking about like him not going to see Justice League yet.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And we were just
Is that out?
speculating. Is that out? Yeah, it's out.
Justice League came out?
Of course you
I
know it came out.
know. Yeah, I'm just I'll wait for it on video on demand.
And
All right.
I said you were busy watching the Apple Dumpling Gang instead.
That was a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. But no, I
Don
watched,
Knotts and Tim Conway. They have the Apple
absolutely.
Dumpling Gang Strikes Again too.
I bought a 4-pack DVD.
Do they
It
have?
has four of those movies.
There's more than two?
Well, no, it's got other movies with Don Knotts. Like I can't remember what the
Oh,
other two.
Mr. Limpet, the fish one,
Yeah,
or
I think
what?
that was. I
Yeah.
think Mr. Limpet was one, and I don't remember what the other one was. But I bought them, and I tried to put the first one in for the kids about a month ago. They're
Yeah.
too young. They didn't. I mean, didn't hook them immediately because it's slow going.
Maybe
So I'll
eight
wait
or
until they're.
nine.
Yeah, I
Nine,
was just gonna
maybe.
say 8 or 9.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's about when I saw him, I think.
But Zach loved Star Wars the other night. He loved
Yeah.
it.
The
Allie
first
did
one? Or
not.
the episode four?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he thought it was great. So I was pretty excited about that. That's
Yeah, you should
cool.
show him the prequels and see what he thinks.
No, I
'Cause
can't do that.
I heard a lot of kids like the prequels better.
That's why he's seen 4, 5, and 6 first.
Yeah. But it'd
Want
be
to make sure.
interesting
Yeah.
if it's a
Yeah.
generation thing.
It might
So
be.
then he can see Phantom Menace and be like, okay, now this is more like it, Dad.
Yeah, exactly, right? I'd be
Why'd I have
like,
to watch those other
you're no son
ones?
of mine.
Now, look on the news. A small child found sitting on the curb outside of a house.
No, he thought it was great. It was cool to watch him watch it for the first time, but I mean, he already knew who like half the characters were just from
Toys or
existing. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't
yeah.
get away from them, So any of the memorable, like, the droids, Chewbacca, Darth Vader, he knew who stormtroopers were. The only ones he really didn't know were the actual human beings. He didn't know what their names were.
Han
Like
Solo and Luke, yeah.
Leia and stuff. Although Allie knew Princess Leia as the only woman in the entire movie.
No, Aunt Beru.
Oh, that's true.
And there's
Very
some
chill.
women
Some
at the
female
bar.
aliens, I think, too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
in the bar in the cantina.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. But I kind of joined when I heard Chris talking about it and the movies in general. And I'm kind of at the same place where it's in Star Wars too. I mean, Star Wars was my thing when I was a kid. But even that, it's like I really don't need a Star Wars movie every single year, and it's starting to feel like it's just not a special event.
Star Wars is paced out enough for me. I can deal with one a year.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't go see Rogue One in the theater. I wasn't like in a rush to see it, but we rented it eventually. But I would like. I didn't see either in the theater or the recent movies, but I did really like whatever the hell it was called.
It was very memorable to you.
The one before Rogue One?
Episode 7.
Force Awakens?
Yeah, Force Awakens.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'd like to see the next one. What is it called? The Last Jedi?
Yeah, I'm going to see all of them, and I'll see them in the theater. It's just that when it came back with Force Awakens, I'm like, oh, my God. I'm not exaggerating. Seeing the trailer for the first time, literally, I was tearing. I got.
Yeah, when you see the Falcon again, that's what got me. I was like, holy crap.
It's like I'm instantly 5 years old again. Because that's how old I was when the movie came out. And it was incredible. And Rogue One, I thought, was an amazing standalone movie. They had a cool, real cool tie to the original.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily need all those off years with like a young Han Solo movie. I mean, I'm going to take them movie by movie. If they're really good, then that's great. But like, I'm not clamoring for one, is I guess what I'm thinking at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't clamor for a lot anymore, because before it was so infrequent, and now it's just we're spoiled.
Yeah, and the movie, and obviously, like you were saying before, the superhero movies is a lot more than that. I mean, you might get one every couple months of the year, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, you definitely get one every couple months. I mean, that's why I kind of pick and choose, just because I'm not interested in seeing that many of them. Like, there's more than I'm interested in. And, you know, I used to just sight unseen, like, okay, there's a new superhero movie, I'm going to see it. Now, right. I kind of look at people's reactions. I take in, like, a mixture of what people are saying and what critics are saying, and I try to that kind of does affect my, like, choice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just things about Justice League that I think, besides Wonder Woman, I've had mixed feelings about all the DC Universe movies.
Uh-huh.
I haven't loved any of them other than Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't hated any of them either.
Mm-hmm.
But based on my experience with all the movies other than Wonder Woman, which I did see in the theater, I just decided that I wanted to wait.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's like I pick and choose too. Now, most of the time I will end up seeing it when it comes out, you know, on video or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't seen Doctor Strange, although I want to. I just haven't had a chance to.
That one's on streaming, so.
Yeah, for free. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm definitely going to.
You have no excuse there.
No, I just haven't had the chance. Like, you know, whenever because, you know, Stacey would want to watch it too, but whenever we're picking out a movie, there seems to be always something else that we'd rather watch on that particular night. So, but I think that might be the only one now that we haven't seen.
Have you seen Spider-Man Homecoming?
I saw it by myself. Stacey wasn't interested. I think she just didn't want another, what she thought of as a reboot, even though it wasn't a reboot.
See, I'll see every one of them, but I go to the movies almost every week.
Yeah, but I mean,
so that's what's out. I'll go see it.
Sure. Yeah.
But my top movie of the year is still Wind River, and that's out on DVD right now. that one's my favorite. And then the Wonder Woman one I liked a lot. The one that was about the creator, the documentary.
Oh, you know what? You did mm-hmm. watch that. That's another one that I wanted to see that I never got around to. So now I'm just going to wait for it to come up on Amazon or whatever.
Those are the two films that I didn't plan on seeing, and I saw and I really enjoyed. Well, the Wonder Woman one, I didn't even think it was going to come out. I thought it was going to be like limited release, like where I had to drive to Denver to go see it. And I was like, I'll wait till it comes out on DVD. So I was happily surprised we had it out for 1 week.
in our area around Buffalo, we have a chain of theaters that basically just specialize in those movies that aren't going to be in the major movie chains.
Yeah.
So they all always end up carrying those like independent type movies. But I read the book about the secret history, secret life of Wonder Woman or something like that. And it was all about him. It was really interesting.
Yeah. They had him recently on the Robert Kirkman thing too.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched that too.
That's really well done. Like that's, to me, that's the best documentary thing because the other ones, they kind of like comb the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Robert Kirkman kind of focuses a whole hour to something. His first one was like Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And then the second one was the Wonder Woman. And then the third one was the Superman, which was amazing, you know. I really, really enjoyed them.
Now, here's what...
And you know that... Seeing the documentary with the Superman creators, it changed a lot of my opinion. I've always been on the opinion of, well, you work for a company, you sign it, your creative rights to certain things, mm-hmm. and they own it.
Yeah. Well, nobody's...
But seeing what happened to them, like...
How is it DC's fault what happened to them?
It's not their fault, but... Man, it's just a series. Like they created it.
Yeah.
They decided to sue, which was a bad move in their opinion. You know, I mean, at the time.
Yeah.
Because they lost, and then they lost everything, and then they tried it again, and it is like, oh man, I mean.
It's interesting to me that. But to matter hear you
how,
say that.
how bitter you could be though, like. For something that, from your heart, you created, right?
Yeah.
And you can't do anything with it.
Well, all right. So it's you said it was interesting to hear what you said because I actually, as I'm watching that hour, I'm actually starting to think the opposite way.
That's interesting.
Well, like you know, for like what you do, if you created a program for the company that you work for,
I know you don't have to like rationalize it with me. I became more sensitive to the process, I guess.
Because what I'm thinking is that, and this is in, I'm not saying that it's. Well, I don't even know how to say. I'm not saying that it's a right thing to do. I'm just saying nobody forced them. To sell their creation to DC Comics. They chose to do that. At the time that they sold it to DC, there was no guarantee he was going to be the most popular hero in the world. It could have, nothing could have ended up happening out of it. Would that mean that they would have given the money back to DC because it failed? No, it was the deal. And then, you know, they get what they get. They continue to make money actually writing and drawing it, you know, even after they sell it, right? And then, you know, they try to sue. It doesn't work.
One of them did.
Well, for a while, they both were, right? Right? I mean, at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, and then the guy went to war, and then he kind of lost it.
So, you know, and then... and then even
the lawyer.
When was it even... And I don't remember the time frames, but I know that at some point, even though they weren't legally obligated to, they gave them, like, a life pension...
Yeah, that was after the Neil Adams in the movie. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
1978. So I mean,
but even after that, the family kept on suing DC up until what, 2013, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
And
so
I think they still are trying to sue, like for other properties. I think Superboy is still.
To me, it's like you went in with both parties having no idea what is going to become of this property. It could have published for 10 issues and never been heard from again. It turned out that wasn't the case. But then why is it up to the company to give you more money because it ended up being successful? They're under no obligation to do that.
Because it just makes me angry that those people there
that had nothing to do with it
are actually making all the money.
And you know what? I totally...
That's what's heartbreaking to me.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that it's right either because, like, you know, you even hear about creators, you know, from the 70s and 80s I don't know how DC does it, but particularly Marvel. Bob Layton was at a con last year, and I heard him talk and stuff, and he created all these beautiful covers and all these beautiful images of Iron Man in for Marvel, and that was his work for hire. He was paid to do that, so he was paid in full. But then on top of it, they put those all over T-shirts, posters, everything. He doesn't get a penny from any of that merchandise,
Everything
because
okay?
yeah, Mabel heard Kara came home and or the garage door open, and she like jumped off the futon and went running and knocked over something on the way in
So,
her
on one hand,
excitement.
you can kind of say these companies are like almost like bloodsuckers. Like, they give you a minimum amount of money, and then they make literally, over the course
I
of a
think if
long
you,
time, they make millions.
I think if you would have asked me 10 years ago, I was the other way, and I think with age, I'm changing a little bit, man.
And it's funny because I think I'm switching the other way, although I'm very sympathetic to those particular, like, I think that they should be fairly compensated, but at the same time, I can understand from a company point of view saying, if this doesn't go back and forth. This was the deal. Like, you wanted to sell this to us. We arranged for this price. That's what you sold it for.
Yeah, it's a
And
contract.
yeah, it's a contract. And every time that, you create something and it
They
falls
sign.
flat, does that mean you're going to give me the money back?
They
No, because that was
sign
a
the
contract.
contract. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's funny because I'm like actually starting to lean more towards the other side. And I was more like that for this past episode. I feel like the Bob Kane Bill Finger thing is a totally different story as far as I'm concerned, because he was doing all the work, but then Bob Kane wasn't telling anyone
It's the same thing
that
with the
Bill Finger
Kirby
was doing anything.
Stanley. I
Yeah,
mean,
that's very similar too. Yes.
it's
I
very
think that's more
similar.
that you're hiding somebody's credit.
And you could see the bitterness between the two. I mean, like if you even if you watch the documentary, they had the thing I liked about the documentary is they had actual Jack Kirby voice footage, and you don't usually see that. And I was like, yes, they had him talking. Like it even showed It showed you like how he wasn't good with words like Stan was. Did you see the interview he had? And he was just like he was mumbling. He couldn't get his thoughts out. But here
That
he is.
wasn't, yeah, that wasn't what he was good at, which
Right.
is.
Here he is with on the creative end. And to me, the Marvel method is the artist is doing 90% of the work because he has to craft the story and draw it up. Yeah, you have to fill in the dialogue later, but it's really like, okay, a family of four going to space, blah, 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 blah. And then he has to craft the whole story, and then he just put the dialogue in. I don't know. It's just crazy. But anyway, that Robert Kirkman, the stuff is really cool.
Yeah, I think so too.
And the movie played, the Wonder Woman movie played really close to the documentary, which was very interesting because the Marston family slammed the film, and really the only thing different between the film and the documentary, which had the granddaughter of the Marston, of the son, the only thing different is they implied in the movie that there was a sexual relationship between the two women, Elizabeth and Olive, whereas that wasn't in that documentary. Even though the granddaughter admitted there was a really strong relationship between the two, in the movie they make it look like Olive is drawn to Elizabeth, not to Marston.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think I kind of fall in the middle in that the contracts and stuff like that were pretty shitty back in the day. So it's a little easier to ask people to accept the fact that they signed contracts in later decades when the contracts were more fair. But a lot of the contracts back in the day, in the golden age and whatnot, were almost kind of predatory. You know, they weren't balanced contracts. They were set favorably in the toward the company, and people signed them because they didn't really have any other options. You know, nowadays there's a lot more pressure on the big companies to have fair contracts because they need to attract people to work for them because there are other options in comics.
And I would agree with that, but also, like, thinking back to that time frame, the 30s, 40s, I'm not sure. I'd have to research, but I don't believe that these were big companies that were at the time that were handing these contracts out, and comic books were not thought of in any regard whatsoever as being
Oh, they were selling a
some sort
million
of a.
copies. Those guys had money.
But what I'm saying is that they weren't huge
But
corporations.
they were rich. Okay, there's a difference between rich and poor. And during that time frame, there were a lot of freaking poor people. Like a lot of poor people.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, I think that went through all the way through the 70s and 80s. I mean, you know, you'd get a basically a kid, you know, like a might be 20, 22 years old. You know, you get them to sign a contract with Marvel to draw it, which is work for hire, and you know, they're basically being able to afford, you know, buying any food, let alone, you know, their apartment too in New York City. You know what I mean? So yeah, I mean that was that. You know, I take your point. I don't disagree. I just, I don't know. I'm thinking of it kind of on both angles. I don't think, for the most part, at least at the beginning, that it was a lot of. I don't know. I don't feel like they were really taking advantage as much as nobody knew yet what this was going to be, if this was going to even be successful or not. I mean,
I
maybe
don't know.
later on they did, but
And
Some of
I
those
also think that
guys that worked for, like, some of those guys that ran DC and Marvel, DC especially, they weren't the most moral people around. They weren't the most moral businessmen. I mean, maybe, yeah, they didn't know what they were doing would be successful or not, but I don't think that like had a ton of bearing on them in the first place. I think their ways of doing business were kind of crooked regardless.
Yeah, so you're saying, and you're probably right, that whether or not if they knew it was going to be highly successful, it's not like they would have given those people any better of a contract.
Yeah, or either way, like
Right.
contracts in general, like that was just their standard way of doing business. I think DC especially had some fairly shady characters early on that was just their standard way of doing business, you know. I mean, I don't know that there's much can be done about it either, though. I think it just kind of that's just the way it was to some extent. But I mean,
For
if
paper sign, yes, they knew what they were doing, but at the when you're desperate for money to put food and water on your table, you're more willing to sign away your life for
I mean, I don't expect like DC to give the rights to Superman away because
No,
then you're
I don't expect that. I think the
right.
pen I think the pension thing was fa a fair thing to do, and I'm glad that they did it.
Yeah.
Because they were living in poverty. I mean, one of the guys couldn't even see anymore. One was delivery, one was like a postal clerk. It wasn't a good thing that, you know, these guys would see their property on TV and stuff and not have a
Well,
damn red cent from it.
here's the other thing too, is that regardless of it, and they even address this in the episode, is regardless of if it's you know, if DC was legally in the right or not, it sure doesn't look very good with you know, to them, for them, that they're coming out with a Superman movie and, you know, stand to make millions and millions of more dollars on top of what they've already made. And yet the two creators are in terrible health and basically, you know, almost destitute. You know, how does that look, you know, for, you
And
know, for
it
people
almost
as a
makes
whole? It's an embarrassment.
right. That's the thing, and that's I think they were, I think if you look at what was happening, I think they were embarrassed into giving them the pension.
That's, I mean,
Do you know what I mean? It
I
went
totally agree.
it
I
went
totally agree.
public, and their conscience was, we're in the
It's
right,
like
we own the
it doesn't
property,
make a
but
difference what legally they're
this is
you know,
wrong.
they're,
They
yeah,
started looking
exactly.
at it from a different perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah, unfortunately, that seems DC seems to wait until they look really, really bad to take action on something.
Well, that's often, it's a lot of companies too that you almost have to embarrass them in order, you know, to do the right thing.
But
Yeah,
DC
part of
is
it's their
better than
size.
DC
Yeah.
is better than Marvel. I mean,
Nowadays, yeah.
nowadays, I'm just saying they switched the tide. Even with their properties, what is his name? KGB Beast showing up in Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, I
The
know.
creator created, he made more movie than he
Made more
did for
money.
Thanos and all the other stuff.
Yeah,
Just for him
created
being,
like
and he was
Thanos and half the
never,
Guardians
not
of the
once was he
Galaxy.
even mentioned to be KGB Beast. Just the name of the guy.
Yeah, I didn't even realize. I'm like, when I watched after I watched the movie, I'm like, what are they talking about? I didn't even know he was in that.
So I mean, the whole thing is interesting. I just get sympathetic for situations like that. I don't blame contracts. I know what's right. But I guess what's ethically right is what's turning me. It's not turning me against the company because they did something wrong. I don't think they did something wrong. They had a contract. I just think it's wrong to be negligent.
I think what you just said hit it on the head. Like what you're more concerned about is what's morally right instead of what's legally right,
Yes.
which makes a lot of sense. And I think that that's how a lot of people, you know, hence the embarrass companies into doing the right thing, because sometimes that's the only way you can get them to do something, because legally they're in the right. You have to embarrass them into actually doing something that's morally right.
Yeah.
We solved it.
All right, well, we had I think we had one question. So, Martin Ferretti of the Nerdy Legion says, for Retrocast, what's the single issue you guys wish you owned but will probably never be able to own due to the price or limited quantity?
That's interesting. Let me think about that for a minute.
My answer's changed. I mean, just recently.
Well, what's well, you start. What's your answer?
I won Action Comics number one. And
On, you'll be able to get that.
no, it's just the historical significance of it. It really is a big deal. It's what kicked off everything after it. So.
Well,
I
that's,
mean,
yeah. Okay.
even if it wasn't about money, historically, I'd want it from an historical perspective.
I would, you know, definitely agree with that. Chris, do you have one off the top of your head?
Yeah, I would say Flash 110, first
Oh.
appearance of Wally West. I mean, if I wanted to save up over time and not buy other things that I want, I could maybe eventually own it, but I just personally, I'm just not comfortable, wouldn't be comfortable spending that much on a comic book, so my desire to own it isn't strong enough to spend that much money on it, especially when, I mean, I was watching an auction one time on my comic shop of a really, really bad copy no cover, you know, I think like a dog shit on it, like I mean, it was poor as poor can be, and it was still several hundred dollars, and you know, I'm not gonna do that, but if money was no object,
a VG copy though is $500
for the yeah most it's part. Doable
if you can find just... it, it's doable, but you're right,
you, yeah,
based on your situation.
Mm-hmm.
$500 is a different amount of money to everybody.
Yeah, well, sure. And even if I
and
had
to think of what else you could spend with $500 than right. one poor, not literally poor, but bad copy of you know, the comic that you want. Did you want to actually spend that much on something that, you know, and it's not in a bad shape by any means, but $500 for that, where you could put that towards a lot of other things. Yeah, I can see that's tough.
Yeah, and just me personally, I'm just not comfortable with spending that much on a comic book. So, I don't. So that was the first thing that came to my mind, is something like that I would like to own, because other stuff that other like classic comics that are really expensive, I'm fine with not having them, you know. And but I have a lot of Wally West's appearances, but that and then other early ones in Flash, I don't think I'll ever own, just because I don't want to spend the amount that they cost. So.
Sure. Well, Mike, I know you wanted to wait until the end of the podcast to talk about this, but maybe it's a good time to mention our new Patreon. And we'll be, and you know what? I'll actually forfeit my portion of it until we can get you that comic book, Chris.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, I was thinking about the reward levels. I was like, maybe for $5, I'll smack you in the face.
Well, how much was the reward level with Bill and the Beet Juice? Was that $1,000?
The Beet Juice whacking off to the Beet Juice?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was like a $1,000 level. Yeah.
Hey, there you go, Chris.
Beaten to the beat of the Beet Juice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just you know, a short amount of your time, and then you're going to be able to afford that comp.
So then I'm you confused. Get Bill's Bill's gonna do that.
I was wondering
for
if
me?
You wanted to do
the same thing. No, Bill is not gonna do that for you.
okay.
I have kind of two answers. One, I probably could. Well, it's not probably. I could still afford. If I would have bought it maybe 10 years ago, I could have gotten a much better copy. But I don't think I'll ever end up getting it. And this is aside from like the Detective 27 or like Mike, like you said, the action one, which like I can't even fathom. These are more like personal picks for me, where stuff that I really, really would absolutely just want. It's just kind of how you said, how you guys both said, you know, for your answers. For me, the first one is Avengers number 4. I would love to have an Avengers number 4 at some point. I just don't think at this point in my life that I'll be spending again that much money on one comic book ever again. I had bought an X-Men number 1. I had bought Amazing Spider-Man 14, and that's well before kids. And even then, that was spending a lot more than I should have. So I can't imagine spending that much again in my life on a comic book. So I think that those are going to be out of reach. The other one is Adventure Comics number 61, which is the first appearance of the original Starman. I'm just a big fan ever since the Jack Knight Starman. I just love like the whole history of Starman, and it would mean a lot for me to ever have a copy of that. And that's one I could probably get in really bad shape. Like I was just looking on the database, and like a good, they say, is around $200. I probably would be actually maybe a little bit more than that, but
that's a pretty conservative cost for that.
You think so?
Yeah, I think it's higher.
Yeah. I would love to have one at some point. I've very rarely Well, actually, I haven't even looked for this one to see how much they are. The ones that I search for every once in a while because it's not as expensive is Adventure Comics number 67, which I hope to get someday, but you can almost never find it on sale anywhere. That just happens to be the first appearance of the Mist, basically, you know, what became his arch foe. And I think that, you know, I could find one eventually, you know, for several hundred, but that's the problem. Am I going to spend $500, $600 at this point for a comic book? Probably not. So that's about it.
All right. I think the way Martin worded it, you should go for the money. If he didn't word it and it was more of a personal item, those are both really good choices for you guys.
Well, if it was just money that it could a comic book could suddenly appear like in my hands, then yeah, I'm sure it would be action number one. But I thought it'd be boring if we all said action number one.
All right. Well, why don't you kick us off with your choice of your comic, Rob?
Sure. So, now, did you read all four of these, or did you just read the last one?
I
I
read
read the
three of
last
them.
one. What'd you say, Mike?
I read three of them.
You read three of them?
Yeah.
Which one did you not read?
The first one.
Okay. And Chris, you read the last one?
I just read the last one, yeah.
All right. So this was a four-parter. What I've been doing, it's Batman number 332 through 335, and I've been I finally got a huge run of Batman comics, and I've been reading through them all. And when I got to this was actually Marv Wolfman's last arc this time around on Batman, and Irv Novik was the penciler. It's a four-part story that's called the Lazarus Affair, and it starts out basically with this very long storyline that's finally wrapping up. That like it appear on a half a page or a few panels every few issues for it seemed like over a year's worth of issues with this financial person, this businessman named Gregorian Falstaff, who was underbidding Bruce Wayne's foundation on like everything, and they were just hinting at things the entire time. Well, finally things they finally had things come to a head, and at this time with Bruce Wayne, Talia has come into Gotham and is actually staying with Bruce Wayne, and that's causing some tension between Bruce and Dick because Dick doesn't trust her. So finally things come to a head, and Bruce finds out that his secretary is being blackmailed into giving this Gregorian Falstaff information about his finances and what he's doing and so on and so forth. Because this guy has her child. So he goes and confronts Falstaff, and Falstaff is like, there's no, you know, there's nothing you can do about this. We've actually bought all of your assets in Asia now, and you know, just if you'd like, we can keep you know, to manage these, but you know, you're going to be working for me. And so Bruce ends up leaving and comes back shortly after as Batman, and starts fighting and wants to start fighting him. And these weird mutates come out, and he starts battling them. Gregorian ends up actually gets killed by Talia, who he's about to get back. Put Batman in some sort of weird like bubble thing that's going to kill him, and Talia comes up to him from behind and knocks him into it. So Falstaff dies, his assistant dies. And then the next issue is Batman impersonating his assistant at a Swiss bank where he was keeping all the money. And they've already discovered that this assistant had died, and so they've set a trap for Batman. He manages to escape. He actually starts skiing down the Swiss Alps, I believe, with these other skiers following him, shooting lasers. It's very kind of James Bondish, actually. It was pretty interesting. And they Talia then comes with him to Asia. That's the next stop on the trail of what exactly is going on and who this Gregorian Falstaff was actually working for. So she is able to sneak them through China to get into, I believe it was Hong Kong. And the last, as they do that, they're going to go on one of those old Chinese junk ships. And they say, okay, your cabin's downstairs. He goes down there and, of course, then there's gas and gets knocked out. And that's the end of that issue. What's interesting about this series or this story is that it involves not just Batman, but then Catwoman and Robin team up and have some backup stories in these that aren't separate from the main story. They're actually leading to the main story itself just from what they're doing. And so they end up being in Hong Kong as well. And in the third part, Batman wakes up. He's in this strange room, and there's a voice talking to him and saying, you know, you can either join me, join my followers and become one of us, or you can be one of my enemies and be my slave, you know, for the rest of your life. In the meantime, Catwoman and Robin have been tied up and are about to be drugged. They manage to get free, and they're also in the same complex, but we hadn't known that until just now. They try to get away with King Faraday's help, but they all three of them get captured and get thrown into this mine that all the slaves are working in. Batman wakes up. Talia ends up rescuing him, and then they're trying to escape, find their way out. Talia's trying to show them the way out. They get stopped by a bunch of mutates and basically get overwhelmed. And of course, you know, who's in charge here? I think we all know from just the title is that it's Ra's al Ghul. So the last part is like a huge battle between those two, Batman and Ra's al Ghul. And it's very interesting because it seems to be the first incident in which Batman finds out about the Lazarus Pit. I thought maybe this was the first appearance of it, but I looked it up and it's not. So perhaps Batman just had never encountered it before, because Ra's is really going out of his way to explain to Batman how it works and so on and so forth. So it seemed like he never...
I think it's the first time they mention it. Where it drives you mad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting because he was really going on about it and so forth. But it's at some point, Talia ends up getting shot by accident, and it looks like she's going to die. So he puts her in the Lazarus pit for really just like a moment or two and brings her immediately out, and it heals her. But he goes on to say that no one but him can be in there for any longer than that moment.
Well,
otherwise,
she was aging, is what was happening.
Yeah, well, she was aging as well.
She was turning old. Like she turned into an old lady.
Yeah, in the previous issue.
Yeah, and it was like, hey, do you want to get young again? Well, you have to come with me.
Yeah, that's true. But I know the pit also healed her, but just because it was just for a quick second. So he said, so Ra's says that he's the only one that can bathe in the chemicals for a minute or more. And of course, you know, as they start battling, once they find out that Talia's okay, Roz just is very angry that Batman's basically not agreeing to join him. So they start fighting, and as you might expect, he actually falls into the Lazarus pit. Roz does himself. Batman flips him over as he's trying to push Batman into it, and he flips him and he falls into it, and he's just in it for quite a long time. And just as Batman and Talia are about to leave, Roz comes out and he's like just like all red, covered in fire, and he's like screaming that his body still burns, and he wants to kill Batman, and like the slightest touch from him causes burns. So Batman continues to try to fight him, but he can't even touch him. He even tries to kick him with the soles of his feet, and it like burns right through his boots. So Roz actually gets on top of him and is starting to really, really burn him, and he manages to grab a weapon and knocks him off him, and he gets up and staggers, and he hits him in the head. Batman hits him in the head, and he falls back in the Lazarus pit. And then the whole island starts blowing up. So him and Talia get on a helicopter and go, and it's presumed that Roz has died. And then at the very end, Bruce is slowly recovering from all of his injuries. Talia ends up saying goodbye, and Bruce says, you know, you're welcome to come back anytime you'd like. But at this point, she wants to find her own path, even if it means that she's going to keep getting older and start aging like a regular person. I think that was my confusion, though, Mike. Was it something that Roz was giving her that was keeping her from aging, or was it the Lazarus pit itself? Because I was under the impression that was something other than the Lazarus pit. But
I think it's the Lazarus pit, but...
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
I don't know why she was aging. I don't. That's the part I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't... I don't have the history with Batman that you do in terms of these older issues. So when, you know, they first established these characters, so that was new to me as well.
Do you see how she walks off into the sunset, though?
And yeah.
She's like, okay... We could be together, but I'm going to age. Like, even when she leaves Bruce, I'm going to age, so she leaves.
Yeah, so like, that's what she said, yeah.
It sounds like she's deteriorating. She's going to age again, like, really quickly.
Yeah. Well, because all that it said was, she says, without my father keeping me young, I will finally grow old.
Yeah.
But so it didn't specifically say.
Yeah, it didn't say why.
Yeah, and it said earlier that only Roz can stand the Lazarus pit for more than a minute, but that doesn't mean that he hadn't been doing something with her for short periods of time.
He got dipped in twice this time.
Yeah, for a lot longer than a minute. But like overall, like, you know, I'm just going through a few little things here and there, but like overall for this story, I just thought it was an excellent, excellent story that it. On one hand, it finally culminated in a lot of these plot threads that were just going and going very, like, in the background. They were never the main part of any particular story in the past, but they kept on bringing up this Gregorian Falstaff over and over again. And, like, where is this going? And so, like, over a year. And then finally, when this, it starts with that. And it was really, like, a really cool adventure because... It started in Gotham, and it started with Falstaff, and then they quickly find out that he was working for somebody else. And then Batman's, you know, now in Switzerland, and he's having an adventure in Switzerland with Talia. And also, Robin and Catwoman are doing something else, and they're trying to, you know, get to Hong Kong. And, you know, then they go from Switzerland to China, and him and Talia are going through China trying to, you know, make sure that they're not caught. And then they get to Hong Kong, and then from Hong Kong they go to this... you know, this island that Ra's al Ghul is, you know, in charge of. It was just a fascinating story, and I really loved how it wasn't just Batman. It was like Batman and a bunch of, you know, allies. It was Catwoman. It was King Faraday. It was Robin. And then, of course, Talia as well. So it was just a really, really cool four-part adventure that was – it was like a real – I mean, I could easily see that as being – even without – even if it wasn't Batman and Ra's al Ghul, they could make this exact story into like a really cool movie without it even having to be
the join me and I will complete your training
It was.
And
It
if you
was
don't join
really
me, I will kill all your loved ones. Everybody that's
basically,
here.
yeah. Yeah, and it was just a really interesting. I thought he did a great job, Marv Wolfman, just wrapping up his run on Batman, and really, really fun to read at the time. I'd be interested to hear what you guys thought, and Chris, I know you only read the last one, but Mike, you got more of a sense for the story itself because you read three parts, so.
Yeah, I liked it. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I even like the Jason Bard backup. There was a
Yeah.
Commissioner Gordon. I think after the Robin Catwoman ones ended, maybe in the third issue, I think there was a Commissioner Gordon short one, and there was a Jason Bard one. And the Jason Bard story was pretty doggone interesting because the insurance company wouldn't give this lady her money because there was a fire started in her house, and they thought she started it, and he had to uncover that she wasn't part of it so the insurance company would give him the money. But I'm always a sucker for Jason Bard. I like the way he was used in like Batman Eternal, and he's always interested me as a detective or a private investigator because he does have that limp. But yeah, this story was interesting. The Talia stuff was very interesting, and there's still like this love triangle going on between Catwoman and Talia, and which is very interesting because that's what they're playing on in current Batman.
Yeah, you're right. And it was funny 'cause as I said, I'm just reading these in order, and just going through, and it just happened to come across this story, and it's very similar to what was going on.
Yeah, it's similar. I wish we could talk about that because that's pretty fascinating in itself, but
Yeah.
that's too current. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say that I do think that although I caught some references, implications of things that happened in previous issues, I probably would have appreciated the build-up more if I read the whole story. But I still understood enough what was going on. I just didn't know the depth of everything. I got the basic idea of stuff that had happened. And it made me curious as to where it kind of fit into the whole Batman Ra's al Ghul history and all of that. But I like the nods to, in other ways I could understand where it fit in other ways with Dick Grayson, where he was at in that period of time where he was going to college or wanted to go to college, and him and Bruce were not getting along as well.
Yeah,
And
he had just dropped out of college just a couple issues before that.
yeah, so and so it's kind of interesting that it was Marv Wolfman that wrote this, because he would end up being the main person in charge of Dick Grayson for a while. So it's a Batman era that I like. I thought it was funny. Well, I thought it was confusing too what you guys were talking about with Talia, because it doesn't really make sense if he was using the Lazarus Pit to keep her young when he's so reluctant to put her in for even a brief second later on. So that was kind of confusing, but I thought it was funny when Roz is all burning and stuff. They One of the effects that they use to convey his condition is that he's drawing words out longer than normal, and so they convey that by adding extra letters to words and stuff, obviously. And I thought it was funny that they did that with, he says something so and so, but something something, and they add an extra T to the but, so he's basically said but like as in like rear end. So
I didn't pay attention to
that was like that's an odd choice there.
that.
editor or whoever was responsible for that. So,
yeah.
that was amusing.
Yeah, I this was a highlight for me and my Batman reading. I've been reading since what was it, 260 something on up, and yeah, this was just a four parter that I thought was just really excellent.
Cool. Yeah, it was a good choice. Something I don't know that I'd come across on my own.
Cool.
So, Mike, do you want to go next, or would you prefer that I did?
What happened to Mike?
I'm here. Oh. I think I altered the new mute button, so I was muted when I was talking, and I was mute when I thought I was mute. But I'll go next. So okay. I've been reading a lot of old stuff, so it's hard for me to pick. But I've never read Captain America number one. That might surprise you, but never read the very first appearance of Captain America. And I own it. No, I'm just kidding. it was on Marvel Unlimited, which is a fine app. I love it for reading at night. And I decided I'd read it. And I learned a lot. The Marvel is not nearly as dense as the DC Golden Age books are. There, it didn't take that long to read, actually. And the thing I like about the way Marvel Unlimited packages the Golden Age stuff is it has all the stories in it. So, like, sometimes when you buy, like, Detective, 27 or, any of those old Detective issues, you only get the Batman story, right? Well, here you get everything. So,
that's awesome.
That was a pleasant surprise. So you get the full book, even though four of the stories are Captain America and the other two are not. You get the whole story.
I think that's fantastic because it drives me insane that, like, Detective Comics 27, you buy that in Comixology, and it's got, like, one small story, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. So I was pleasantly surprised about that. I was also pleasantly surprised on the origin story, how close it was to keeping everything intact, not only for the movie, but the actual origin of Captain America. It was very concise. It was very short. It had to do... this is pre... I assume this is all pre-Pearl Harbor. And the things that I've been reading lately are a lot of pre-Pearl Harbor stuff, which is very interesting because I just finished the Shadow Green Hornet special, which I absolutely thought was amazing, which was also pre-Pearl Harbor. But they're in America. Cap's there with his partner Bucky later on after his origin story. Well, the origin story is cool because it's concise. They still do the shop like in the movie where they like go to the, they go into that shop and then they go to the secret room. In this case, they had an old lady there and it wasn't really an old lady and she introduces them. They say the secret word. They go to the back room and one of the guys that goes back there is a spy that's working for the Germans and he actually kills the doctor that gives Steve the super soldier serum. It really played really well. Art is fantastic. Like, Kirby art here is very different than Kirby art in the 70s, which is my favorite depiction of Kirby art. But I really do appreciate this art. And this is very different from his Fantastic Four. Like, if you read the early Fantastic Four issues, his art style is very, very different from the early stuff. And, from there, he becomes Captain America, the super soldier, and he's stationed in the United States. So it's all like before we entered the war. And the thing that I find fascinating in all of this stuff, especially that Green Hornet Shadow, that's amazing because Michael Ursland, he had to do with Batman 89 and a bunch of other stuff. He wrote that series. He like researched heavily like what was going on pre-World War II. And man, it was a scary time because there was a lot of rich corporations that were willing to swing their way towards Nazism for money. And that's the way this early Cap stuff was played. Is there's like somebody like Howard Hughes, like a Howard Hughes type that owns an airline company that's working with the Nazis that Cap and Bucky have to foil. There's a lot of poisoning stuff that goes on where there's a prose story in this Cap story where it's just him and Bucky. They're at one of the forts where they're training the soldiers, and a bunch of gangsters break in and they knock out the guard outside of their tent. And so they go out there and there's like, what's going on? They think the guard is killed, but he's not. But what they're doing is they're trying to poison all of the military's rations so they all die. And they were able to foil that. And then there's a Red Skull story, which is the very first appearance of Red Skull, and that is pretty fascinating because it's a businessman in America that's portrayed as the Red Skull, and he's wearing a mask, and he's also trying to kill American soldiers pre-World War II. So a lot of stuff that I learned, and I was really surprised on the context of it. Like it was. Sometimes during those old Golden Age books, they read like they're trying to tell you everything that's happening, even though you see the picture. This not so much. It was sort of really well told. What else is there? Oh, there was another story called Hurricane, which is kind of a Mercury knockoff, like the god Mercury. Hurricane has to take down Pluto, and that's that story. He's like super fast, and then he has the wings he could like take out of his pocket and attach them to anything. So like he attached them to a taxi one time. He's like, "Can you take me to this location?" He puts the wings on the back tires, and the car just takes off. And the taxi driver's like freaking out. It's almost like if you've seen The Rocketeer, and Peavy is driving the truck. And the Rocketeer's on the back, and the gangsters are chasing after him. And he's like, okay, just hold on. And he gets his rocket pack, and he's like, he just shoots the rocket pack, and the truck is going like hundreds of miles an hour, and he's trying to control the truck. That's kind of like what this taxi driver went through when he finally got him to the destination. He was like, I can't believe I'm alive. He was all stressed out. But it was a pretty good story. And then the last story was a Neanderthal story, kind of like if you read Anthro from DC, he was a teenage cave boy. And this I can't remember his name, and I actually don't have my iPad with me to look it up. But he was a teenage human-looking cave boy, whereas the people he was raised with, because his parents were killed, were like Neanderthals. They were like hairy, ape-like creatures, and that's who he trained with. But it was a cool story. So I was glad that I read it. I was glad that it was complete, and I'm definitely gonna finish these Captain America stories. And it makes me want to read, like Young Allies and a couple of other things as well.
I don't know if I've ever read that first issue either.
Yeah, I've never
Like
read
I've seen
it.
like the excerpts or whatever, and like probably like anniversary issues and stuff. Maybe I've read it
Yeah,
that
they've
way.
had the origin. I don't think I know for a fact I never read the Red Skull, the
Yeah, I
first
don't think
Red
I've read that
Skull.
either.
Like I was surprised to see that he was not a German, he was an American.
Yeah, because that's, he's portrayed now as being from Germany.
And there was another story too. There was like these people that would predict the future, right? You know, they would. There was two stage actors, if you will, that people would go in droves to go see, and they would predict the future. And they would tell you of like terrorist acts. Oh, the bridge is gonna blow up, and all this stuff. Well, they were Nazi guys in the United States that were actually blowing up the bridges. So they believed these guys were telling the truth. So Cap and Bucky had to foil them as well. Really cool stuff.
And how about that iconic cover, Mike?
Yeah, he didn't fight Hitler though.
Go ahead.
He punched out. I mean, it has him punching out Hitler on the cover.
Yeah.
And I think he's punching out Hitler on number two too, because it's already loaded on my to read list. But Hitler.
But like you said,
Hitler's in a panel. But it's more talking about like what's happening overseas, you know.
Well, it's like you said. This was like almost a year before we joined the, you know, before we entered the war.
Yeah.
So for a comic book on the cover to be having its hero punching the leader of a foreign country a full year before we're actually at war with them, that was very interesting.
It's already making a statement, is what it's doing.
Absolutely.
It's basically saying this is our stance and how we feel about the Germans.
That's right.
So, I wanted to read it so bad because of the Shadow Green Hornet comic I read, which is brilliant. It's from Dynamite. And at the end, in the back matter, he breaks down like the panels and then tells you the historical reference data behind it. And it's really fascinating if you're a history buff. And when it comes to World War I and World War II, I really am very fascinated by it.
That's cool. Very cool.
Yeah. All right, Chris, it's all you.
Okay, well, we're recording this the weekend after Thanksgiving, so I thought I would read a couple comic books that at least have a cover that has something to do with Thanksgiving. One, I read two, and one turned out to be more focused on Thanksgiving, and the other one is more just the cover. The one that's more actually a Thanksgiving issue is JSA 54, which I have read before, but it's been a while. And this has got a cover with it's guest starring the JLA. It's harking back to the JLA JSA meetups. Power Girl is serving a turkey, and Superman standing behind her, and you can see Jakeem Thunder, Kyle Rayner, Jake Garrick, Stargirl, a little bit of Mr. Terrific, a little bit of Batman, Alan Scott, Wonder Woman, and Flash on the cover, and Adam is standing on the table in his miniature form. But it takes place at the headquarters of the JSA in Manhattan, and it starts out with Batman and Mr. Terrific talking, and this kind of a running theme throughout the issue that Batman can't settle down and enjoy Thanksgiving, that he thinks it's a bad idea getting everybody together under one roof, that they're asking for asking to get attacked. But there's a lot of heroes gathered. It's called the issue is called Virtue Vice and Pumpkin Pie, playing off there was a one shot with the JLA and JSA called Virtue and Vice, and the artist of that story was Carlos Pacheco, and he did the cover of the issue, but the interior art is by Don Kramer and Keith Champagne. And it's very much an issue that kind of just is written to enjoy the different characters interacting with each other. Wonder Woman is talking to Hawkgirl, Stargirl, and Power Girl, telling them, you know, even though Thanksgiving is something you can celebrate, you should also acknowledge what happened to the Native Americans, basically, and Firestorm comments on Wonder Woman being kind of a downer, and things like that. What's his name? Wildcat, though, takes like an opposite opinion to Wonder Woman and gets upset with her. Power Girl gets mad at him, having no tact, and throws him out the window.
So it sounds like a typical family Thanksgiving.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a political discussion. And, yeah, Wildcat gets thrown out the window, and Superman catches him flying through the air. He's coming in with Shazam. There's kind of a funny interaction between Bart Allen, who is still Impulse at this time, and Jakeem Thunder, as younger people. There aren't that many young people there, and so they kind of meet up for the first time and talk about the fact that they both are from Keystone and what schools they go to and stuff. And but Jay Garrick is nearby, and Bart says that his school totally blows and he gets reprimanded. And Jakeem says, yeah, school fucking sucks.
What? And,
I mean, it says, yeah, school. And then, you know, they have like it.
Leaped out. Yeah.
They have it. Yeah. Using punctuation marks, but it's ing sucks. So it's, you know, it's there's no doubt as to what he said. So Jakeem, Jakeem gets yelled at by Jay as well. So Batman's wondering why or who's on monitor duty, and it turns out Dr. Midnight is has volunteered and is sitting there. And there's a scene with where Black Canary comes in, and they have kind of an awkward conversation because prior to this issue they had like sort of a I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it was, I guess, some missed signals between them about possible romance, and Dr. Midnight, I thought maybe there was something there, but there wasn't really. And so amusingly, though, Batman shows up and just to check in, and they tell him everything's fine, and from there, we have Our Man cooking in the kitchen, and Jesse Quick and her mother, Liberty Bell, come in, and Liberty Bell embarrasses Jesse Quick by making comments about her and Our Man. Johns touches on the Green Arrow Hawkman rivalry, and that Green Arrow shows up and fires an arrow through the drumstick that Hawkman's trying to eat, and they almost get in a fight, and Joan Garrick reprimands them. So finally dinner's ready. Courtney is upset that she has to sit at the little kid's table with Jakeem and Bart. but Jay Garrick leads the toast. And we have some just interactions there at the table between a few characters referring back to different things. There's a panel where John Stewart is talking to Obsidian, who's Todd Smith, who's not costumed. He's just there in his regular clothes, and they're just talking about not long before this issue, there was the storyline where Obsidian was teamed up with some other villains, and they're just discussing the idea of guilt and John Stewart's talking to him about, you know, that he's been able to move on past his own mistakes, and Jade and Alan Scott talk about some stuff, and then Mr. Terrific tries to pass the mashed potatoes to Batman, and Batman says, "I'm not hungry." And just as he says that, there's an explosion, and two villains show up, Kulak the Sorcerer and the Warlock of Ease. And like, together we'll crush the Justice League, the earth will tremble before him. And then the a bunch of the heroes are just standing there with food all over them. And then the two villains start counting how many heroes they just appeared in the middle of them. And they're like, maybe we should excuse ourselves. They were just sitting down to eat. Yeah, there's a splash page with the two of them surrounded by a whole bunch of heroes, which I think this might be a mistake, but Dr. Midnight is one of the heroes that's surrounding them. He's not supposed to be there, but unless I missed him coming to dinner, but I think that's actually a mistake that they drew him among those. But anyway, since the food was ruined,
he's supposed to be on duty. He's supposed to be working.
Right? Yeah. Yep.
So maybe I think they let him like,
just to get some food.
Just to get some food and go back.
Yeah, he was like in the middle of grabbing a plate. And
yeah, exactly.
There you go. It's like, I'll grab a plate and I'm going to go back to monitor duty.
Yeah.
He had Ma Huckle watching while he was gone.
Yeah, there you go. Good job, Mike. You get a no prize.
Yep.
So since the food was ruined by the villains, two guys in a van deliver 20 large meat lover pizzas and one vegetarian pizza, and it's $210. Mr. Terrific pays them, says keep the change, and then Batman answered the door with them. They don't take their free breadsticks. And the last page is the two of them. It kind of like mirrors the beginning of the issue with the two of them walking down the hallway. This time the two of them are walking down the hallway, but they're both holding stacks of pizza. And Mr. Terrific says, "All right, go ahead and say it. I know you're dying to say it." And the last panel, Batman says, "I told you so." But it's fun. I mean, there's a lot of the characterization is really on the nose, you know, playing to expectations. Batman especially, you know, his... played as kind of like a character of Batman somewhat, kind of like he was in like the Giffen DeMatteis era, you know, where like his personality is used to the humor, to a humorous effect. Mm-hmm. But it also kind of makes him like one note. But given that even when this came out like 13 years ago or so, these kind of issues were rare. It was appreciated, you know.
Just a nice light story.
Just a light story that's just based on seeing superheroes get along. I mean, there's you can't even consider what happened to fight. You know, it's more of a joke. You know, so
yeah, exactly.
And I think that this came at the end of a pretty long storyline, if I'm not mistaken, or pretty close to the end of a fairly long storyline. So I always appreciate that in runs when they give you a breather after something like that. So
yeah,
that's about all I got to say about that.
Rob,
all right, well, I got another one. Sure. So, I decided to read this 50 Center that I got quite a while back. It is part one of the adaptation of For Your Eyes Only, the James Bond movie.
Is that Marvel?
Yes, sir.
My Eyes Only or Mike's?
Your
or...
Eyes, Chris, Your Eyes Only.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Such a great song, too.
Everybody else, yes. Hang up.
Sheena Easton.
Yeah.
So
I think that
this
was my first Bond movie.
Really? I don't know what my first one was. I think it might have been A View to a Kill, because it was constantly on HBO.
I've never
I'm
been
not
the
sure.
hugest Bond fan,
I
but
was just going to ask you guys if you guys are James Bond fans. I'm an incredibly big James Bond fan.
do you buy the comics?
I bought the first set of them, and then I bought the second. Now I'm kind of on and off. If it seems like it's a gonna
Be
if
a
the
good
story
arc.
sounds
Yeah.
interesting, yeah, then I'll buy it, because you know how they're doing like six. They're not doing it. Well, I guess they are actually have an ongoing again. I'm not getting the ongoing. I can't remember what the new one is called. The new mini, this the 6 issue one, but I can't even remember who's writing this one that I like. What was it? It's called, okay, the other one was called Hammerhead. That was Andy Diggle. Okay, this one is Kill Chain. Yeah. So, I think who drew the did the first one? I think it was Warren Ellis launched it, and I thought that was okay, but actually I enjoyed the two minis that Andy Diggle's been doing. So now I'm kind of following him. If he's gonna write one, then I'll probably pick it up. I'm not getting the main series that relaunched again. Ben Percy's writing that. I just looked it up, so I haven't gotten that at all. Have you bought any of them, Mike? Michael?
Yeah, I bought all of them.
Did you? Did you read any of them?
Not yet.
Okay. That's the question I should be asking you.
There's one that I haven't got because DCBS said they were shorted on, but it was a one shot. But other than that, I've
Is
gotten.
it the hardcover one that stole this one?
Did you get it too?
Well,
Did
I
you get it?
ordered it, but it's not it I don't get a shipment until
I can't
this
remember which
week.
one it is. It
Yeah, it's
was
just a one
a
shot.
one
Oh, it's not
shot.
a hardcover. Yeah, it is just a one shot. I did order it though.
Yeah, I got an email just like the other day saying that they were shorted, so I didn't get it.
Gotcha. Interesting. Well, okay, so this one is when Roger Moore was James Bond, kind of in the I think the middle of his tenure. So Larry Hama is the writer, and Howard Chaykin is the penciler. So you have some talent on this. It's only a 2 issue adaptation. I only own issue
Well, he'd
one,
be
so
good drawing it, that's for sure.
yeah.
Because
Yeah.
he his character he's very like Black Hawk-esque or American Century-esque.
Oh,
Like
it's very.
he that character is fits in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. So it starts out with James had just visited the grave of his wife, who was killed a few movies beforehand. On Her Majesty's Secret Service, he got married, and then immediately, as they drove away from the church, his archenemy, Blofeld, killed his wife. So this is relating to that. He's visiting the grave. He gets in a helicopter that's been is calling for him, and as it turns out, he's never named in this, but Blofeld is. Has taken control of the helicopter, has shocked and killed the pilot through his headset, and has taken control of the helicopter to finally kill James Bond. James is the door of the helicopter is locked, but he's able to smash through it, and he leaves the passengers part, and then climbs into the pilot part of the of the helicopter, through those the rungs underneath, and he manages to yank out the wiring that was controlling the helicopter remotely, and he ends up scooping up Blofeld's in a wheelchair at this point, so he's able to scoop up Blofeld on his wheelchair with one of the rungs of the helicopter, and then drops him off through into a down a smokestack chute, and. Presumably kills Blofeld. And I could go into the whole reason why that happened and why he wasn't called Blofeld in the movie. but this isn't a James Bond podcast. So I'll just continue with the comic. And now the main story begins.
Was this before Octopussy or?
It was, yeah, before Octopussy.
Okay. Was it the one right before Octopussy?
It might have been. Let me see the year. 81. That sounds right. Yep.
Okay.
Because I think Octopussy was like 83 or something like that. Yeah. So yeah, that would be right. So this boat that's in the Mediterranean Sea. It looks like a fishing boat, but there's more to it. It's a British surveillance boat that has a system called an ATAC on it that is able to spy on things. And what you see here is that in the fishing net, one of those old what do you call them? They're those mines, those sea mines that are, you know, those balls with the spikes on them. Do you know what I'm talking about? In the ocean that are like
mines.
Is that just what they're called? Just mines?
Yeah, they're sea mines kind of thing.
Yeah. So it hits. They actually get that by mistake, and as it tugs against the boat, it puts a hole in the boat. They tell. They say, you know, everyone, you know, abandon ship. We have to destroy this ATAC system first. So just as the guy's about to hit the self-destruct button, water comes pouring in and everyone drowns, and the ATAC system is not able to be destroyed. So it's just down in the sea. then it cuts away to this Greek woman is visiting her parents, who are archaeologists, on another boat in the Mediterranean Sea. And she just gets there. She says hello. She says, okay, I'm just going to drop my things off down below. I'll be right back. So she goes down below, and the seaplane that dropped her off comes around for another pass and shoots and kills her parents. And she comes up and sees that her parents are dead, and she knows who the pilot was that flew her there. So she knows who did it. James Bond gets called to London at this point and is charged with finding this boat that's in the Mediterranean Sea, because it's not down very deep, and he needs to get a hold of this ATAC system before the Russians do, because it's not only is it a spy system, but it also has transmitters on it to order all of the British submarines to launch ballistic missiles. So if it falls into somebody else's hands, they could actually order the subs remotely to launch nuclear missiles, on their own city, on British land. So they track down this Cuban hitman named Gonzalez, who was the one that killed that woman's parents on the boat, to Madrid. So James goes there, and he's spying on them, and he gets caught. And just as they're about to put James Bond down, a crossbolt hits the guy, this Gonzalez, in the back, and he falls into his pool. That distracts his minions, so James Bond is able to escape, and he meets up with this woman that whose parents had died. So her name's Melina. They get into her car and they drive away. They manage to escape, and then he convinces her to try not to take revenge, because she's not doesn't have any expertise in this, and that basically she's going to dig her own grave if she tries to go after this group, and that, you know, he's going to take care of it. So he ends up identifying who this businessman was with Gonzalez, the one that was handing Gonzalez money for killing her parents. So he goes to Switzerland to track this guy down. And he gets introduced to the informant there, whose name is Christados. And Christados has a protege that is going to be in the Winter Olympics. She's an ice skater. Her name is Bibi Dahl. And this may be the only time in the James Bond franchise where he's actually declined to sleep with the one of the females in the movie because she's like 16 years old. So he actually, she's coming on to him left and right, both in here and in the actual movie, which is like actually kind of very awkward to watch. But anyhow, James excuses himself and he's walking like kind of through the plaza of this town in Switzerland, and he sees Melina, the woman whose parents had died, and he sees this motorcycle with spiked snow tires coming at her and warns her just in time to jump out of the way, and he knocks out the guy that was doing that, and they sit and have a talk, and he convinces her to go back to Greece while he takes care of this again. He goes to his hotel room, and there's BB naked in his bed, and this is when he tells her to put her clothes on and doesn't take advantage of the 16-year-old. So we don't have to hear about any of sexual harassment in the news from James Bond, at least. Or I should say sexual assault.
Did he know she was 16?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
She's portrayed as a young
16 in the movie too.
I don't know if they gave her that, but she's obviously underage. She's portrayed as being underage in everything that she does and says in the movie. So he's like, he even says, she's like, you know, you don't like me. He's like, oh, of course I do, but I don't think your Uncle Ari Christados would approve. And he goes, now get dressed, and I'll buy you an ice cream on the way to the biathlon. So it's kind of funny. he goes out into the slopes with her, and she calls his attention to this German. What is it? Is it I can't say it. What the hell? Biathlon. The one where you ski and shoot. I don't know if that's what it's called.
What is the event where you ski and shoot, Barb? You ski like cross country ski, and then you get to it, and then you shoot it. Is it a biathlon? Yeah, that's what Barb says. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So that's what this
Olympic
guy does.
Fan. So. I remember playing that on the comet, like one of the video game systems.
Me too.
It was Nintendo or something. Do you remember? It's like you'd have to like have this endurance where you'd go like really slow, and then you get exhausted.
With the joystick.
Shoot the gun. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God! It was awesome. We had those. We had one that was like a whole thing that was just called decathlon, and it had, you know, 10 of the events, and like the sprint, like you're just basically trying to move the joystick back and forth as fast as you possibly could. And I remember being a kid, and we had the Atari, and we had that decathlon. My uncles would come over, and they would freaking break all of our joysticks because they'd be going back and forth so hard.
Yeah. You don't have to push that hard on those things.
Well, they did.
I was watching Walking Dead, and he was playing boxing. The Atari boxing. I mean, that was basically a circle with two arms.
Yep.
I remember it distinctively as an Activision game.
But, you know, I mean, at the time, that was fun. It was just simple fun.
Yeah.
All those games. All right. So anyhow,
Punch Out was way better.
Yes. So she calls James' attention to this Eric Kriegler, who is the who's this German champion, and you can see that he kind of gives James kind of a side glance as well. So James excuses himself from BB and says that he has an appointment to keep, and as he slides starts skiing downward, somebody shoots the ski pole right out of his arm, and then shoots the gun out of his hand too, because he pulls his gun out after his ski pole has been shot away. And of course, it's this German Olympian. Not only him coming, but now they've got a couple more people on those spiked wheel motorcycles chasing him as well. And he's able to actually, through a bunch of fancy maneuvers, able to do a very long jump on his skis that actually lands on a log cabin and slides off the other side. And the motorcycles, obviously they can't do anything. They actually crash into the cabin and he's able to get away. So at that point, James meets with one of his Greek informants again, and then goes to the practice rink and says hello to BB and BB's trainer. And just as they're leaving, and he's just hanging out for a minute when a bunch of these guys from an Olympic hockey team go to start practicing. But instead of practicing, they start shooting the puck at him, and then they start knocking him around with the sticks. And it looks like he starts trying to fight back, but there's about four of them, and they knock him down, and they say hold him down. The only way this could end is with his death, and then that's the end of this particular issue. And as I said, I don't have issue two, but I have seen the movie many times. This was a good adaptation. It was actually a lot of fun to read. I actually do listen to a James Bond podcast as well, and that they recently restarted. So it's been getting me in the mood to watch a bunch of these James Bond movies. And I think that that's the reason why I decided to finally pick this one up and read it. Cause it's been on my read pile for all like back issues that I bought in the past for about almost a year.
I'm surprised you read it, not have the next one.
Yeah, but you know what? I probably wouldn't have, Mike, if I hadn't already been so familiar with the movie.
Yeah.
Because I can already fill in all the gaps. I'm actually kind of surprised where this ended, because it seems like there's a lot of movie left. And I would have, based on where this ended, if I wouldn't have already known how many issues this was, I would have said it was three issues instead of two, because I'm not sure how they got everything else in the movie into the second part.
Maybe they cut a lot of it out.
Yeah, but it was cool. It was fun to read. I recommend picking it up if you're a James Bond fan, but otherwise you probably wouldn't be interested.
Who doesn't like a James Bond?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are people.
He gets a sexy women.
My wife.
They always walk out of the ocean wearing almost nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right. That appeals to everyone.
Well, when Daniel Craig became James Bond, he came out of the water wearing almost nothing. So they're going to all demographics now.
I thought that was a nice move on their part.
Yeah. He's a great James Bond.
He's a different James Bond.
He's a more rugged, tough.
Yeah, he's not as like Roger Moore was like, I gotta drink my tea this way, and yeah, you know, like
he's, he's kind of
very fancy. Yeah.
Yeah.
British. He's the British gentleman.
Sean Connery was like the man he was more like the man's man kind of Bond.
Yes. Yes, I totally agree. I think that Sean Connery, Daniel Craig's probably the most similar to Sean Connery, but I think Daniel Craig is even more kind of tough.
Like, but he's the closest, wouldn't you say, to Daniel Craig?
Yes.
Sean Connery.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they just have a ruggedness about them that the other guys don't. Like all the other guys were playing Roger Moore, in my opinion.
They were playing Roger Moore in their own way. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I'm not the biggest. I couldn't name all the films, or it seems like I've only went to the theater to maybe watch one James Bond film. I never.
Do you remember what it was or no?
Yeah, it was one of the Daniel Craig movies.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe the second or third one, Solstice. I
think it was. Oh, the Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that's probably not the best of his movies, but
all the other ones I've seen kind of on DVD or VHS.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have those marathons where they show a lot of the James Bond films. Who's your favorite James Bond?
Me?
Yeah.
probably overall it's still Sean Connery, but honestly, I think Daniel Craig is absolutely amazing. So it's one or the other. I think for contemporary, Sean Connery, you have to give it to him because, you know, he was the first one and he basically helped create how he was going to portray him. But I think Daniel Craig is really fantastic.
I like Daniel Craig, but he seems different. Like, I don't know. I of all those movies, I enjoy those movies the best. But I would say the way I envision James Bond, just from what a little I know about him, I would say Roger Moore.
Roger Moore was my James Bond growing up. So he was my favorite, you know, when I was younger. But then as I started to watch the movies more and more, then I was able to appreciate, I think, Sean Connery a little bit more. And then when Daniel Craig came on, I just really enjoyed him.
My favorite Daniel Craig one is the first one.
Casino Royale.
Casino Royale, yeah.
That may be the best James Bond movie, to be honest with you.
Well, it's the only James Bond that I've seen more than once. I've seen it three times. So, I mean, that says a lot for not being the biggest James Bond fan. But
yeah,
it's interesting to hear what people think that know the franchise and what people think that don't. Or not, you know, just watch it.
Yeah.
How about you, Chris? Do you have a James Bond movie, or do you not care for the property?
No, I've seen a lot of them. I've seen all of Sean Connery's. I've seen most of Roger Moore's. I've seen a couple of Pierce Brosnan's. I haven't seen either of the Timothy Dalton ones. And I've only seen Casino Royale. I haven't seen any of the other Daniel Craig's ones, which I just for some reason I never got around to it. But
Skyfall is really, really good too.
Yeah, because I actually like Casino Royale a lot, and I like the approach that they took with Daniel Craig. I liked how he was more rough and a bit brutal and prone to making mistakes and stuff, and I thought it was really refreshing, a really refreshing change. It just happened that I haven't seen any of the others, but I would like to eventually. Because I've only seen the one Daniel Craig, probably I would say Sean Connery. Because I didn't grow up with any Bond. I think I happened to see one of the Pierce Brosnan ones growing up because it was on a lot or whatever, but I'm not a huge fan or anything like that, but I enjoy aspects of them. So
yeah. It sounds like you know quite a bit about them, just in terms of, like, you knew that there was only two Timothy Daltons.
Yeah, because, at one point, like, I do get intrigued by long series, and so at one point, I hadn't really seen many, and so I went back, and for a while, I was working my way through them from Dr. No, from the beginning, that's how I saw most of the Connery and Moore ones. And so I left off just to take a break and never got back to it.
That happens. I mean, you're talking what, 20, 24, 25 movies. So
yeah, I watched a lot in a row.
Yeah.
Not back to back, but you know, without taking long breaks. And so at some point I kind of want to fill in that gap and see, like, the last couple more and Daltons that I haven't seen, and then see the rest of the Craig ones. So yeah, I like them enough that I watched quite a few scenes. Yeah. I've seen quite a few of them, and kind of I like seeing how things that series that have been around for a long time, how they change over time.
Yeah,
so
very cool. Yeah, it was it's something that I got into when I was a kid, and then I remember I was, you know, I was probably in my 20s, and they started releasing them all on VHS. So I kept going to every, you know, every time I had enough money, they came in like 3-packs, and they were in no particular order either. But you know, at that point, then they finally had them all, up to that point. And so I had them all on VHS, and then probably 2 years later, that's when DVDs came. So, I'm like, oh, great. But I just kept what I had until, finally for Christmas a while back, maybe 6-7 years ago, my wife bought me like a Blu-ray box set of all of the movies, through Quantum of Solace, and it had like a little empty space for the Skyfall disc, because I knew Skyfall was coming out, but it wasn't out on DVD yet. So, so yeah, so it's pretty cool. So then I'm like you, Chris, I've actually watched, I started watching him from the beginning through, but I have watched them all at some point, and then every once in a while I kind of get in the mood to watch some. I just watch them at random, or like actually lately I go to the older ones a lot more than I go to the ones with like Pierce Brosnan and so forth. So I decided this last time around to start with GoldenEye, which was Pierce Brosnan's first one, mm-hmm. and then work my way through his, and then go to the Daniel Craig ones. But I've only watched like three in the past probably 2 or 3
Isn't
months.
Isn't that a big deal for a Nintendo game? Like the people.
GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the huge. Yeah, Nintendo 64. That was a really good game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They talk about that one even in the movies.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very good.
The Apatow films. James Bond, GoldenEye. Let's go play it.
That was a good game. Yeah, I remember having it too.
Yeah, one of my friends in my first year of college had a Nintendo 64 with that, and that was a pretty frequent activity for us, was 4-player GoldenEye multiplayer, just on like one, you know, like it's back then you didn't really have much online, so it was like just right. A small TV split into 4 sections, and you just had to
make
look
it
at
even
one
smaller.
Section.
Yup. Oh, yeah. That's cool. So who's next?
I'm next.
Okay.
All right, so I'm continuing my Clone Saga that I've never read. It's interesting, though, because I own some of them, but I obviously didn't read it because it was in 4 titles, and I only have one of the titles. And there's no way I could have read it like that, like because it's continued issue after issue. So, did we lose somebody?
I'm here.
Chris? I think we just lost
Looks like
Chris
is... Yeah.
That's weird. I can't even call him. Interesting. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and continue, and then I guess he can ping me, because I can't... Let's see if he answers. That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, call failed. Oh, if he pings us up and you see it and I don't see it, can you tell me to add him back in? I'll add him
Chris,
back
are you
in.
There?
No, he's not even connected. I can see him on the screen.
All right, yep. Yes, I will.
He's not even showing up with the green light if you look
at
his thing. Yeah. So he
Something
either got
happened.
Unplugged or he had to go. But, I'm reading. I always like to tell you how I'm reading it. I read part of your series on paper, and then the other part I got a digital copy of. But he's back online. I think I just saw him get.
I just saw it pop up. Yeah.
I can try to call him back. I saw him pop up, but he's not showing green. We'll see what happens. But I read Amazing Spider-Man 397, 398, Spectacular Spider-Man 220 and 221. And this is called the Web of Death story arc. And the interesting thing about this is Amazing and Spectacular were focused on Peter Web of Spider-Man and Spider-Man were focused on Ben Reilly, and it was a lot of comics. I mean, it was a lot of comics. And this is one of my favorite Spider-Man arcs, and I've never read it before. And you can see like seeds to Superior Spider-Man. That's what I like think I love the most. Is the Doc Ock stuff.
What issue was it again? Five what?
Amazing Spider-Man. Oh, what's happening? Let me make sure my recorder's working.
Hello?
Hi.
Well, that's interesting. It just started another recording.
Maybe because I connected back in.
I hope I didn't lose it. But I'm sure I have something. We'll see. Let me
All
just go to the folder real quick.
right.
I've never seen that happen before. Podcasts. No, it's under roaming. This is fun podcasting. Roaming MP3 Skype player. MP3.
It might
And
be
then.
because I got disconnected because my internet went down and then I
Yeah.
disconnected back in.
Well, I have one big file, and then it looks like it started a new file, so I should be able to append the two.
That's good.
And
So
it's
what issue
recording.
of Spider-Man was it?
This is Amazing Spider-Man 397, 398,
390. Okay.
and Spectacular Spider-Man 220 and 221. And it's the Web of Death story arc. It follows the Web of Life story arc, which is a fantastic story arc in itself because that has the Grim Hunter, which is Kraven's son, wanting to kill Peter, and Ben Reilly knows about it, and he's trying to prevent it from happening. And so I really like that. And then it really brings in Kane, and Kane is like a character that's just killing people left and right in this Clone Saga era. But what I loved about this is, in the previous arc before this one in Amazing Spider-Man, the Vulture poisons Peter, so he's going to die. Mary Jane went to go visit her father and make peace with her sister, which she never had. And she comes back to a house that's decimated. I mean, there's milk cartons everywhere. It looks like somebody's not lived there. Peter's been like Spider-Man consistently for like it seems like the last 48 hours, maybe even longer. And he's got a venom in him that Vulture gave him, and it's killing him. Like he's going to die. And what's cool about this story arc is that Doc Ock feels the obligation to save him because of his optimism and because he believes he's heroic. And he believes truly that if anybody's gonna kill him, it has to be him. So he actually tries to save him. And the other thing that's amazing is it introduces this Amazon-looking woman called Stunner. And I have to do research on it because I'm like, where the fuck did she come from? Because she's all over Doc Ock. Like she's sexually attracted to Doc Ock. And the way they introduce her is she goes into a bar full of men and they're bitching about their spouses and doing all kinds of stuff, and she just says, "Hey, I'm the woman you're looking for," and she just beats the shit out of everybody in the bar and almost destroys it. And Doc Ock has to come in and pay the bar guy and say, "Hey, this will pay for the damages, but there's nothing I could do about the hospital bills that all these people are gonna have to go through." But this Stunner is like, I think she like vanished, like she was introduced and then never really explored again. I think she might have a few more appearances in future issues, but on the Wikipedia, I have to go find out if this was her first appearance because she just popped out of nowhere. I'm like, where did Doc Ock get this Amazon woman? Like, how was she sexually attracted to Doc Ock? And it never answers it. But so we have Stunner. She loves Doc Ock, but he finds Spidey in an alleyway and needs to cure him. And the first injection, It looks like he heals him, and Spider-Man's in a fever. He doesn't even know what's going on. He comes back. He goes home. MJ's there, and she's like, are you all right? You know, I haven't seen you in a couple days. What's going on? She just got back, too. And he says, yeah, everything's fine. And that's when she, like, says, Peter, I need to tell you something. And Peter's like, I need to tell you something. He's going to tell her, hey, I'm going to die, even though he's feeling a little bit better. And she's going to tell him what he says, you go first. And MJ says, Peter, I'm pregnant. And he's like, holy crap, I'm going to have a child and I'm going to die. Well, that's real great. So he decides not to tell MJ that he's going to die. And I'm also interested because I know for a fact that they don't have a kid. So I'm interested to see why they don't have a kid, because she is pregnant. So Doc Ock flips out in his lab. He's like, holy crap, that antidote I gave Peter is not going to work. It's only a temporary fix. He's going to die in the next 48 hours. So Peter has some good sex with MJ, you know, like makeup sex, because they've sort of like separated because Aunt May's in the hospital and she's dying. She's in a coma. And the other thing that's happened is this comes after Pete's parents came back into the story arc and were frauds and then killed again, I believe. So then Peter's like decimated emotionally, and then he's got this clone Ben Reilly out there, and the whole clone saga is really weird. It's told really weird because it doesn't want you to, it almost wants you to think that Ben Reilly is the real Peter at certain points, because Peter has flashbacks of himself inside of tubes, and you're like, well, what's all that about? But anyway, Doc Ock gets him again, and he says, here's the antidote. And Pete's like, why should I trust you? And a big thing goes on. He's like ready to die, and he's like, well, what have I got to lose? I drink the potion, and I live, or I die, and I'm going to die anyway. So he drinks the potion, and it does cure him. And then a bunch of cops come in, and they arrest Doc Ock. And Doc Ock's like in an armored car going to prison, and he's not worried, because Stunner is going to rescue him. She's on the top of a building, ready to land on top of the armored car and break Doc Ock out. And Kane gets to her before, because Kane's trying to protect Peter, and he knows that if Doc Ock gets out, he's going to want to kill him eventually. So Kane knocks out Stunner, jumps on the vehicle, and then kills Doc Ock. Like, he kills him. Well, we know he's not dead, but he does kill him in this comic book. No vital signs, he's dead. And it was a roller coaster ride, and I absolutely loved it, especially the scenes with Doc Ock saying why he kind of like loves Peter. It's like it's almost like a Batman Joker type relationship. One can't exist without the other. And it really plays into, I think it's a must read if you're going to read Superior Spider-Man, because it gives some of that depth. And I really liked it. I absolutely loved it. So I'm really digging this Clone Saga. I'm about 3/4 of the way from the first omnibus, and it's a big book. And the second omnibus has already arrived. So,
got some reading to do.
Yeah. I've kind of been reading like 4 issues a month, maybe more than that. This time I've read maybe 6. But that's all I got. But it's good. Cool. Have you read the Clone Saga?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it was, you know, just as it was coming out monthly. Mm-hmm. I've never read it since then.
A lot
it
of
wasn't.
People
it was
it
okay.
Of,
I didn't hate it by any means.
The last two arcs were amazing. I mean, that's where I was like, these are really good. The Web of Life and the Web of Death, really good stories.
Yeah. It was you know, it was something that even at the time I was hearing that a lot of people were upset about it. I I think it had a lot of problems, especially, you know, if you're reading it month by month rather than back to back. But
when it first started, it had a lot of problems, but I'm seeing a lot of cohesion, and it's like the writers are flowing well together right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's because I'm so far in or where I'm in at it, but the last couple of arcs. And the other thing is when these were monthly, you were alternating stories, whereas in the omnibus, they combine the stories. So, like, if you're reading it monthly, you're going Peter, Ben, Peter, Ben, Peter, Ben, like that. But if you read it in the omnibus, you're reading Pete, 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 Ben, 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 Ben.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
It's a different experience. And so I'm experiencing it a lot different than you did.
Yeah, sure.
My stories are flowing more the way they're supposed to, I think.
Right.
Whereas yours was like alternating. You might say, okay, this is Ben this week and this is Pete this week. And
exactly.
Yeah. All right, Chris, you got anything else for us?
Pete, 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 Pete.
Pete, Pete, Pete.
Ben, Ben, Ben. Do I sound okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I'm on my phone now, so I wasn't sure if it was
your internet
an all right connection or not. Yeah, I think it was just briefly. I think it's back up now, but rather than switch again, I'll just finish out this way. Yeah, I'll go through this quickly. I also read Impulse 33. Which is another Thanksgiving cover. It's got Bart on the cover, and it looks like he's eaten all of Thanksgiving dinner by himself. He's saying, "What do you mean this was for everyone?" And it says Thanksgiving special, but Thanksgiving is not mentioned once, as far as I can tell, in the entire issue. And the scene on the cover does not occur in the comic.
What number was it again?
33. But it's it was written by William Messner Loebs, with art by Greg Rousseau and Barbara Kahlberg. And it starts off at Bart's school. He is impatient because, he's always impatient, but him and a bunch of other students are trying to get a Christmas tree in through a small door. And he says, "I don't see why Impulse couldn't have done this." And they say, you know, if he did it, then all of the needles would have blown off the tree and it would be wrecked. The early part of the issue, first few pages, involve this man named Jesper Pearson, who shows up as a new social worker, and the assistant principal didn't even know that they had one coming. But he references a whole bunch of stuff that's happened, and I'm assuming it's stuff that has happened in previous issues, probably because of Bart being at that school. But from the outside perspective, it looks like it's a school that has a lot of issues and needs someone to help the kids process everything. And we get Pearson meeting with a few different students over several pages, and his style is leave something to be desired, to say the least. As a school counselor, he seems to really be leading, like, you know, in police interrogations, they talk about leading the witness and suggesting things. And he kind of does the same thing as a counselor. Like, he reads into and suggests things to the students that they aren't really saying. When he eventually meets with Bart just blurts out the truth about his origin, and then stops himself. And of course, counselor doesn't believe him and thinks that he's like constructed this fantasy life to deal with trauma or something like that. The other thing that's going on in the issue is there is a villainess that has accepted a contract on the first page that she's being paid to frighten and kill the witnesses against a group of people who are being held in Manchester, Alabama for toxic dumping. I think that connects probably into a larger plot that I don't have all the details on, but there's a fun scene. Of course, at this time, Bart's guardian is Max Mercury, and Max is aware of this of an assault on the police station by this villainess called White Lightning, and Bart is freaking out because the school counselors ended up looking into the fact that Bart doesn't have a birth certificate or any of the traditional documentation because he's from the future. And there's a kind of a fun page where Max calls someone and kind of he mentions field agents, so it's probably like the FBI or somebody similar, and he has some kind of connection there. He just tells him, yeah, it's me. No, I'm not dead yet. I need a couple favors. And he goes on to list all these things like birth certificate, credit history, and all that type of thing for himself and Bart. And he's like, all right, problem solved. But eventually, the villainess, I don't know if she's, someone calls her White Lightning, but she calls herself Moonshine. I think Moonshine might be her actual name. But she has an encounter with Bart, of course, with Impulse. And he takes her gun at first, but she tricks him when the gun starts making a beeping noise that it's going to blow up, and it doesn't actually, and then she takes off. So he goes home and just is writing through ream after ream after ream of paper and composing this huge document. And basically it's his plan for all the different scenarios that he can come up with. But unfortunately, he's calling her White Lightning. So maybe she has two names. I don't know. So he's got this plan, but Jasper Pearson, the counselor, shows up when Bart and two of his friends are out on the highway waiting for White Lightning to show up. And that was not something that he planned for. So Bart's efforts to kind of plan for everything don't work out too well. And his stack of paper that he's carrying around with him gets sucked up into the intake on this military helicopter that ends up coming into the situation later on. And Max shows up and helps. The issue ends. With Moonshine or White Lightning, whichever her name is, going back to the person that hired her, this like bald white guy, older white guy, who pays her because she is ultimately successful. And he says his name's Edward Dunsany. But yeah, like I said, it really has nothing to do with Thanksgiving, not like JSA did. And there are definitely a lot of threads that connect to the ongoing story that I'm not really aware of. So I didn't completely understand everything that was going on. I got the basic gist, but it was average. There were some moments that I liked. Max Mercury's characterization is fun. Otherwise, it wasn't, as a Thanksgiving issue, it wasn't very good, but it was decent. Otherwise, this is a regular comic. The art style is on the cartoony side, which I think it's suitable for the book, but it was a little, it kind of lacked detail. And Bart's hair at this time, you know, he has like the really crazy hair, the really huge, like, poofy hair on his head, and it's like the way that they depict it, it's almost like a little out of control. it might be a little too much. I want to rein that in a bit, but yeah, it was okay, and that's all I got.
Just okay, huh?
Yeah,
that's all right. Well, I've got one more.
Go for it.
I read this morning. I read The Avengers number 198. This was how do you pronounce David Michelinie? Is that right?
I think so.
Okay, that's how I'll say it. And George Perez on pencils, and man, I think he's probably my favorite artist ever. In this particular issue, it's almost the whole thing is one big battle. It's got Red Ronin on the cover. He's a huge, looks like a Shogun warrior robot, but apparently he was created by S.H.I.E.L.D. according to this. I like the first page, because it has the Beast and Wonder Man, walking down the street after a full night out drinking. They started with a glass of wine, a jigger of brandy, and a gallon of Muscatel. So they're totally hammered. I don't know that we'll see something like this again.
Those two get along a lot.
I know. I love
they're like bosom buddies.
Yes, I love it. And now that you know Disney owns them, I owns Marvel. I don't think that we'll see a lot of two superheroes walking down the street absolutely hammered from the night before. But it was just amusing because they're just, you know, chatting. They're talking about different things. And then all of a sudden they see this huge giant. They actually say, Wonder Man says, and anyhow, here we've got a great view of the Hudson River, the Jersey coast, a giant red robot. And then they both go, a giant red robot? So this huge robot's just marching through the Hudson River, and before they can even react, these kind of like, I don't even know what you'd call them, but some sort of things come down, scoop them up, and they're it's from the Quinjet. So they're being reeled in, if you will, to the Quinjet, where Iron Man and Jocasta and the Vision, Captain America, and Wasp have already on the case, because this particular huge robot is walking through the city. So they keep trying to defeat him. Basically, nothing's working. Cap's shield is bouncing off of it. Iron Man's repulsors aren't doing anything. Vision tries to go into it to disrupt its circuitry, and there's some sort of force field preventing him from even being able to get in, and he bounces back and has to be rescued by Iron Man. It's being run from this strange guy who, for whatever reason, he has decided that people have been living in fear for too long recently, the recent past, recent few decades, I guess. He talks about fallout shelters in the 50s, and he talks about all of the unrest in the 60s and everything, and now he's talking about energy depletion now and mass starvation and escalating street crime, and that his motivation for getting into this, taking over this SHIELD robot, is to kill the fear, not any particular fear, the fear, and how he plans on doing that is by getting out of New York City, and then once he's out of New York City, he's going to activate the jet propulsion system in Red Ronin's boots and attack Russia directly, which will cause Russia to attack us, and then everyone can get over the World War III and move on with their lives and don't have to live in fear anymore. That's his solution. So this guy's totally crazy. But as I said, the whole issue is him slowly moving along as the Avengers try to defeat him. At one point, they manage to find an access door in one of Red Ronin's feet, and it knock in the alarm system has traps that knock out Wonder Man, but Jocasta and Beast actually get in there. Nick Fury shows up in this, it's called the Behemoth. It's SHIELD's anti-Godzilla aircraft, because what you learn is that SHIELD actually created Red Ronin as a solution to defeat Godzilla, because if you remember back during this time frame, late 70s, early 80s, this is a 1980 issue, Godzilla, Marvel had a Godzilla series. So this ties in with the fact that SHIELD had created Red Ronin to actually attack Godzilla. One of my earliest comic books was Godzilla.
Yeah,
it was. I think Godzilla 23 was like one of my very first comics. Like, you know, maybe in the first 10 or 20 comics I ever bought. I can picture the cover in my head right now. But so they're continuing to try to attack Red Ronin, and really nothing's working. They get Wasp and Yellowjacket to shrink down and actually get into the main control room where this guy is. But before they're able to do anything to him, he actually triggers a powerful exhaust fan that he was going to use in case of gas attacks. And it sucks the two of them out because they're insect size. So they're having trouble. The only interruptions to the main story is just a quick one and a half page interlude with Ms. Marvel, Carol Danvers. She's in the hospital. Wanda, Scarlet Witch, is with her. And I'm not exactly sure. I don't remember what was going on with Ms. Marvel at the time, but apparently she came in last night and they told her that she's 6 months pregnant. And now this morning, last night she was 3 months pregnant. And then this morning she's reacting as if she was 6 months pregnant. And she tells Wanda there's no father, that this is impossible. So not exactly, I don't remember where this was going with Ms. Marvel, but it's really just a really quick page and a half interlude before it goes back to Red Ronin. And they continue to try to defeat him. And basically what they end up trying is they route all of the power in SHIELD's Behemoth ship that Nick Fury is piloting into Iron Man's armor and do a huge, enormous blast that sucks all the energy out of the Behemoth and through Iron Man's armor to zap Red Ronin, and Red Ronin falls down, and it seems like he's going to be defeated. But then what happens is he ends up just standing back up and start walking into the ocean. And the last thing that the man inside programmed him to do was to go and destroy. And now this man's totally knocked out from the shock. But Red Ronin is still going. So it's going, I think it said it was going into Queens. and with the intention of just starting to destroy everything because that was the last directive. Then it gets up, walks away, and then there's just a quick epilogue where Hawkeye has left the team, and he's the security chief at Cross Technological Enterprises, and he's playing cards with a couple of the other security guards where they get a perimeter alarm, and he goes to check out to see what's going on. He doesn't see anything. He sees these two red columns. He's like, wait, what is this? And he looks straight up, and of course Red Ronin is right there, and that's the end of the issue. So they weren't able to defeat him in this issue, and I'll have to read onward to see how they managed to defeat him in the presumably the next issue before their 200th anniversary issue. But beautifully drawn by George Perez, and it was a cool story to get into. This is one I've had sitting on my pile for a few years, and I just never got to it, so I decided to pick it up today.
So first time read.
First time, yep, for this particular issue. Although I've read a lot of the other issues around it in the past, I haven't read them anytime recently. Mm. But this particular issue was one that I had been missing for quite some time. I managed to pick up, I think, on mycomicshop.com, but I just never had read it. So, yeah.
Is that whole thing with Ms. Marvel, is that connected to that whole crazy storyline with her? That where she is pregnant with, like, what was it? Like, that really bizarre...
I vaguely remember something, but like I said, I don't remember anything with it. Was it like some sort of like weird alien thing or something? I'm having trouble remembering what exactly the story was, but it has to be that though.
Yeah. I got to look it up cause it's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh wait, what issue did you say this was?
This one was 198.
Yeah, because it says in issue 200 she was taken to an alternate dimension,
mm-hmm.
where she's brainwashed, seduced, and impregnated.
Oh my.
She gives birth to a child that rapidly ages into another version of Marcus, who is ultimately unable to remain on Earth after Hawkeye.
I vaguely remember this. I mean, like, I've read a lot of those later issues, but very much out of order, so.
Yeah, it's pretty controversial. It's been criticized, like, for how it was treated. Basically seemed as though she was raped.
Yeah. And she was like a plot device to just go to lead to a different story or event or whatever, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I got one more. Archer and Armstrong number 0, I reread. And it was my first Valiant book. I remember going to college and getting it at a comic shop right across the street. And it's what drew me in because it was so different. Like, it wasn't capes and cowls. It was about a kid growing up with a minister as his father, or a preacher. And they have a dirty, dark secret, that's for sure. It's really
yeah,
dark. It's really dark. He's a kid that wants to please his father because he's kind of ignored by his father and mother, and he wants to always please them. So like he's being bullied, and he gets bullied because he can win. Like he'll be at like shooting hoops, like horse with somebody, and he bets people that, you know, I can beat you at horse no matter what. And he can't miss. Like, he's gifted with his abilities. He can shoot backwards. He can bounce the ball off the concrete. He'll make it. And so he thinks he's blessed by God that, like, he can't miss. And he goes in to tell his father and mother, you know, like, I can't miss. and he walks in on his mother and father, and they're kind of like almost nude, and they're abusing one of their sexually. I think they even kill her because you never see her
eyes. I think so too.
And there's a lot of blood, and there was a boy before then that they murdered, and so they're killing a lot of their members, and it.
I think that.
It looks like they're youthful members, like they're teenagers.
They were kids, yeah.
She basically confessed to the preacher and says, you know, I've sinned. He says, bring your sins forward. He listens to their confessions, and she says, you know, I've touched myself, and my mother is very upset with me. And he says, well, why don't you come by the house later? And and so he witnesses that and then runs away, and he, like, knows something's really, really wrong. And the parents try to kill him, and they try to set it up so he's going to burn to death in a fire of their. They said, we can't get out of this, so we're going to light the house on fire and knock him out and tie him up to the kitchen so we'll let our son burn.
And Mike, much darker than the revamped origin,
oh, yeah,
I think.
Oh, yeah, much darker.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're there, and they're just going to let him burn to a crisp. And he with his abilities, he's able to, like, knock a knife off of the stove area and break himself free, but he's still suffering from smoke inhalation, like, really bad. So they have to take him to the hospital. The parents find out he lived. So what's the first thing they do? They go to the hospital and say, can we be alone with our son? And they want to kill him. They're going to kill him. But he knows this, and he escapes, and he ends up getting going to, like, a monastery after he hijacks on a ship. He and works his way on the ship. He ends up in a monastery where he trains, and he trains to be vengeful and use his abilities so he could go after his parents, who he knows are hurting children. And that's when he meets Armstrong, and Armstrong's a bum, and he gives him money and stuff to help him out. And Armstrong realizes that he's good people. And then later on, that's when the sect comes in. And you see a lot of the sects, and there it's not sex like sex, S-E-C-T, sext. You see that a lot in the volume too, but they're. They're trying to kill Armstrong, and they convince Archer that he's the devil, and so he actually gets hired to go after him, and he realizes, hey, these guys are the ones that are wrong, and they kind of team up at the end of the issue. But it's a really dark, and they were going in places with a shared universe that nobody else had touched before. There had been dark issues before, but they're usually in, like, solo series. This was like darkness within a shared universe. And I prefer the older Archer and Armstrong to the newer Archer and Armstrong. Even though I like the newer Archer and Armstrong, I enjoy it. It's a little more on the humor side than where they came from. And they've always had the humor side because Armstrong's always drunk and always drinking, and and he treats life a lot differently. But it started off from a really dark place, and it's a really cool issue. And they pretty much go right, you do a couple issues, and then you jump right into Unity, and that's how I got sucked in. And then I was like, I need to go find out all the other stuff. And that was an expensive way to go about it back in the day, because those early issues of Magnus and Solar were a lot of money. But yeah. I managed to get them.
I read it not too long ago, that omnibus that they came out with.
Yeah,
so I read probably in the past couple of years, I guess. It's the first time since they originally came out. And yeah, it was really good. That was one that, because it only lasted 26 issues, it stayed strong for pretty much the whole that whole run.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the other ones for Valiant kind of dropped off over time. This one stayed pretty cohesive. It was a good story.
Cool beans. Do you have anything else, Chris, before we end this episode?
Nope. That's it.
Have you read any of the original Valiant?
A little bit.
Mm.
I've read a little bit of Rye. Some Shadow Man.
Ah.
Yeah, mostly early issues.
Exo Manowar.
Yeah, I've sampled a few issues of some of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I read New Valiant early on for a while.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, but so I can compare what you were just talking about. I don't think I've read that issue you talked about, but I can compare it with what they did in the new one.
Ah.
Definitely sounds a lot darker and less humorous.
Yeah, very, very much so.
It had its humor, but like it initially came from that. I mean, that was what a dark origin, you know?
Yeah.
Mm.
Their parents are creepy too. They were just creepy.
Very creepy. Yeah. Basically, they're sexual predators slash child killers.
He finally grows to an age where he's going to say, I'm going out to seek vengeance, and finds out his mother and dad are in jail because they were caught. So he's like, that's when he meets Armstrong, because his task is already done. He's like, well, what am I going to do with my life now? Because my whole life has been based on seeking revenge on my parents.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, it's a one hell of a first issue. That's for sure.
Yeah, it is. Definitely nothing you were going to see from DC or Marvel at that time.
No, definitely not. All right, well, you've been listening to Geek Brunch Retrocast. You can reach Rob at Rob Krieger on the Twitters, me at Mike Myers Brunch, and Chris is at MythMakingETC. And our site is geekbrunchpodcast.com. And that's also where you can find us without the .com on Facebook. If you search for Geek Brunch Podcast, you can click the like button there and follow us there. And I guess next episode will be my choice. So it's we've circled around.
Very cool.
Round two. Fight.
So, I think I already know what I want, but I want to make sure it's available. On some kind of media like Comixology or something. I don't think I'm going to go with a Marvel one, just to change it up a little bit. But I'll try to get that to you guys probably before like midweek. So we'll talk to you guys later. And I hope you guys had a good Thanksgiving and a good week ahead of you.
Yeah, I hope you guys do too. All
right. Yeah, I also hope that you guys do too.
All right, we'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Thank you.